Listen up, folks. For anyone experiencing aches and pains on the golf course, I'm talking to you. We recommend Alni CBD Body Care. If you've been curious about hemp CBD, here's an excellent brand to try. Alni CBD boasts high-quality, handmade hemp CBD products. They are all third-party lab-tested and 100% vegan. There are topical salves for external localized relief, unflavored sublingual drops, lip balm with natural SPF, and many, many more. Visit alnicbd.com. That's alnicbd.com for more information to order. Use code GROUPCHAT. That's code GROUPCHAT for 20% off at checkout. Howdy, Group Chatters. Chubba Watson here. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 3 of the Group Chat Golf Podcast, hosted by the man himself, the Group Chat Golf Guy, Sonny. And of course, next on the pod, Mr. Daniel Lafferty. Today we are joined by our first guest. He's the Assistant Superintendent of Charles River Country Club, Austin Cyrus. We discuss playing through etiquette. We recap our first business meeting, and I tell pace of play idiots what they need to hear most. All of that and more. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Group Chat Golf Podcast, Episode 3. Had the Travelers Championship this past weekend. One of the Group Chats, big fans here of the Group Chat Golf Podcast, Dustin Johnson, finished 19 over total. Got a big W, Coastal Carolina alumni. Guy likes to party just like us. Just one of the guys. I love that about Dustin. New putter for the third straight week. Also a reason that he's just one of the guys, because I've literally been doing that same thing myself. He's literally just one of the guys.
Shout out Dustin there. And just checking in real quick, Sonny, what place did Tiger Woods get?
Tiger Woods was not there this week, but don't worry, Chubba. He'll be back.
Okay. It's just the third, week in a row. I hope it's not as back.
It's definitely not as back. He is back. We'll put it that way.
Okay. Sounds like it might be as back, but I hear
definitely
you.
Definitely not. He, the fusion. He's fused. We got the Rocket Mortgage Classic coming up next.
And I'm sure he'll play
no,
in that.
No chance. He's out of that one already.
He doesn't need
to play in that.
Prepping for Augusta.
That's it.
Okay, that's right. He's getting ready for
exactly.
Augusta.
So
in November.
So that's our weekly PGA Tour recap, because that's not what we do here. We're just everyday golfers. So we have our first guest on today. Big day, first guest.
Big day.
Assistant Superintendent at Charles River Country Club, Austin Cyrus, also worked at Ridgewood Country Club in New Jersey and the Country Club in Brookline, which is a beautiful track. Tough to get on there.
Legendary.
Austin, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. We got a lot of rain these past 24 hours, so as a superintendent, it's a good feeling. It's a great feeling.
Austin loves the rain.
I will say I'm a big rain guy myself. I'm always checking the radar. I've just always had a thing for weather. Love when those storms roll in. Sunny Storm Chaser, they call me. I have a big question, and we talked about this last week, and I'm sure millions and millions of golfers out there have this same question. You pull up to a course, everything looks fucking spectacular, green, lush. The course layout is beautiful. Then you hit your ball onto the first green, and the greens are rolling out of six. Slow greens. Everybody hates slow greens. Everybody loves fast ones. Austin, why do slow greens exist? What are these courses doing? What is it that makes them keep slow greens rather than just making them lightning fast all the time?
Well, there's a bunch of different variables that can kind of go into why a course might have slow greens. It could be the maintenance schedule. It's something that it's kind of hard to have, especially with the as current situations have been, that a la COVID-19. Thank you very much. And then other things like environment, you know, depending on where your green is situated on the golf course, what kind of environment it's laid out in. So just the tip of the iceberg, those are two things that can really make your green slower. Yeah.
So interesting. So you're saying it's kind of out of the hands of the staff there in some cases, and more conducive to the environment.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's sometimes, you know, as a superintendent, you do everything you can to please all 150 to 300 members, but you know, they gotta understand that in some cases you just don't have the staff, or you just don't have the scheduling, or you just don't have the weather playing to your advantage to get those greens up to speed.
I've heard a lot around here about courses that get quote unquote too much play. But at the same time, we have courses that are stacked with tee times every day, stacked with leagues, and they have beautiful, fast greens all the time. And then there's courses that get the same amount of rounds per year, and I've literally never seen fast greens at that course. Is that just a decision by the course to just keep it green as opposed to risking it and cutting the greens short or rolling them and going through a hot week and losing everything?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely can be the decision factor, you know, because like as a superintendent, you're trying to play both sides of the court there, you know, you're trying to get fast greens, but you're also trying to manage a budget, which you might not have the money to get those fast greens. You know, you might not be able to mow every day, you might not be able to roll every day. And then these courses that are able to do that, typically their budget's a little higher. For instance, I'm at a golf course where we have a budget that's $3.5 million.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, and then I came from a golf course before that where the budget was $1.5 million. And the dramatic difference on course and the playability of the course, it's absolutely phenomenal how much money can change your golf course.
Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. So, Austin, let me ask you this, because I play a course that probably has a budget of $100 that they spend on the greens. So is there anything you could pass along to an assistant superintendent at a course that's maybe a local muni, or a couple things that these lower budgeted courses could do to help kind of jazz up the greens a little bit?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the bigger things is firmness of greens. You know, if you are an experienced superintendent or experienced assistant, and you know that your drainage on your greens isn't great, you know, try to figure out a way to get better drainage, get more of that water to suck through the soil, so you're not sitting on wet soil and wet grass all day, a la slow greens. So yeah, I would think drainage. Also, another thing you could do is probably lower your height of cut. You know, I know a lot of guys like to kind of stick between the 150 to about 0.95 area. We're talking. And to me, my personal experience, lower height of cut can work, but also can also backfire. You know, you're going through a drought. You have a low height of cut. You're showing more crown of the plant. You have to get more water out there. And then if you can't, you're going to see those municipality greens where, you know, you're starting to see brown out edges and, you know, you're just like, what the hell is going on with this green right here?
Right. The old risk reward.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
So with a smaller budget, you're kind of forced to, you know, I guess monitor to not risk it as much and kind of play on the safe side and cut them long.
Exactly, my man. And some memberships are very like, I'd rather have slower greens and have my greens be green than brown. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like,
I think that's,
I like the aesthetic look of the green instead of a fast green that has a little brown tint to it.
Yeah. Sure. That's how it is here. I think a lot of the courses that are like centrally located, and I live in the smallest state in the country, Rhode Island. So a lot of the courses that are in the middle of the state and easy to get to, they're perfectly green, but the greens just are so slow and soft, they just get watered all day. It's like, it's frustrating because you get there and you look around and you say, oh, this is gonna be a fucking sick round, and then 15 minutes later, you're on the first green and you're like, fuck, this is going to suck. I'm not going to make a putt all day, you know?
Yep. That's exactly what we strive not to do, is have that consistency all the way through. But hey, man, it's multiple ways to skin a cat. And yep, some superintendents with a low end budget, don't get me wrong, do a phenomenal job with what they got going on.
For sure, for sure. So I have one more question, and I wasn't even going to ask this, but now that we're here with an assistant superintendent from Charles River, I got to ask it. Are there talks around like the maintenance crew when somebody's having a bad day and they're putting pins out there? Because sometimes, man, it just seems like we always joke about it. Like the superintendent hasn't gotten laid in months. Every pin is right up against the fringe. Every pin is on a little hill, just enough to keep your ball rolling so it won't go in the hole. Are there bad days and good days? Or sometimes are you guys just like, oh, we're going to fuck these guys today? What goes on in there?
You know, that's a very, very good question, because I will say on the dark side of things, we do joke around saying we're going to mess with these guys today. So that does happen. That does happen. You know, it's our way of getting a little bit of revenge, you know. You guys are hitting golf balls into us. We're just trying to do our job. So, hey, fuck it. We're going to put a pin on the edge of the fringe here. But for the most part, my man, I think a lot of places kind of just go with whatever works, what the quickest way possible. You know, for us at Charles River, we have a pin sheet. So we have a 1 through 7 pin location per each green. So like today, for instance, today was day one. And so on that pin sheet, we look at day one and we go out and put all those pin locations out on day one. I mean, we're kind of an older golf course. We're a Don Ross golf course. Don Ross is a architect who typically loves his undulations on greens.
Legend.
Legend of the undulations, man. Yeah. I got greens that you're walking straight 90 degrees up. It's crazy. But yeah, man, so it's all dependent on the guy that's out there putting out that pin. And yes, he might not have gotten laid that night, or, you know, something along those lines definitely could have happened.
That's great. Yeah, I actually, at the course I grew up working at, and I'm going to put him out on blast here, because I think the same guy is still there. Cranston Country Club. We used to go out there as juniors at night. And he would literally follow us around and turn the sprinklers on the holes that we were playing on. Like this guy, I swear to God, dude, on purpose. I swear to God, he followed us around. It was like, and this guy, he just had a chip on his shoulder. And he, like I said, he kept the greenest golf course in the world, but the greens run at a 5. One time the Cleveland Tour came. And on the second, I don't even know if that still exists, but on the second day they said, yeah, we can never come back here. These are the worst greens we've ever had. Like that's how bad they are.
Hey, man.
but it's one of the most played courses in Rhode Island. So, I mean, you know, like I said, they keep it green. The price is right. It's in the middle of the state, so they can do it, you know?
Yep, and that's what you're battling, you know what I'm saying? Like, am I going to pay this high-end money to $150 a round to go play this golf course that's, you know, the greens are great, or am I going to enjoy myself, play that $40 round golf course, and have a great time, hang with the boys?
You're right. So at the end of the day, it pretty much just comes down to the money, huh? If you got a high budget, you're probably going to have fast greens. If your budget's a little lower, you're really going to have to work at it to have those greens.
Yes, sir. Exactly. The money rules the world, my man.
Yep. Ain't that the truth? Anybody else have anything for Austin here?
Oh, no, thanks for joining us, Austin. That was super informative. Keep them fast and smooth down there at Charles.
Hey, I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on. And, hey, boys, like I said, come join me at Charles River. We won't screw you over. We won't put the hoses on you. We'll just enjoy a nice round of golf.
Awesome.
All right, Austin.
Austin, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, have a good one, fellas.
You too, man.
Thanks.
All right, so that was Austin Cyrus, assistant superintendent at Charles River Country Club. He's got quite a resume. We were really curious to see why do courses have slow greens? Because I fucking hate them. I fucking hate them. It's such a letdown.
Yeah, that was interesting to have him on to hear kind of some of the ins and outs there from an assistant superintendent's perspective on things. Because I tell you, there are some greens that I play that, I mean, they're like moon craters. I mean, the ball bounces 15 times before it gets there. And I just think, you know, maybe with a little effort, you know, if maybe somebody in the and the pro shop cared about having a green that rolls smoothly, we could get these things accomplished. And it sounds like with just a couple little tweaks there,
it is possible. And at the same time, it's also a risk. So I understand why a course that is banking on public play doesn't want to lose their greens. You know, they're not just getting a membership price, you know, membership fee every year. They're not banking on that. You know, they don't have that money coming in every month. They need to have the course nice so people can come play it. So I understand how money is the main focus there.
Green sells.
Yep, green sells. So that's that actually brings us in perfectly to our discussion today. And we had a lot of people want to hear about this topic. And, you know, you could talk about it all day, but private courses versus public courses. I mean, it's something that I've thought about every single year. Am I going to join somewhere this year? Am I going to just travel around and play all the different courses? Do I want to get, you know, play the same course every day or spend the money going around? So let's jump into this. Now, first and foremost, I want to talk about the atmosphere, private versus public. I think everybody understands that when you think you think private course, you think it's stuffy. You think everybody's staring at you when you walk in. You want to have your shirt tucked in, no hat in the clubhouse, so on and so forth. So for me, atmosphere wise, private versus public, I'm taking a public course all day. It's so chill. You feel like you can wear a t-shirt. I mean, I would never wear jeans, but I see them out there and I'm not judging. I'd love to see people on the golf course. So even though I am a member at a course that is private, that lets public play. So I guess I've actually heard I heard a couple of guys arguing. One guy saying it's a private course. The other guy saying, nah, it's public, you know, public can play it. So I'm kind of in the middle. It's got private conditions, but lets the public play. But I like the public vibes all day, public guy.
Oh, there's nothing like traveling around either. Play rounds. I know you can do that sort of through the private club network, if you will, you know, a lot of member guest stuff, but for the most part, you're getting 30, 40, 50 plus rounds in on the same track over and over again. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it. How boring that must be. Obviously, like Austin said, yeah, we can move the pins around in seven different spots for each day of the week. You're still playing the same tee box. You're playing the same track. You might be hitting one different club in from the fairway the next day. Just so boring and basic. I mean, why not travel and explore? Even if you play, you know, a course that isn't that great, just to get out there and play something different and see a new track, see a new hole, try and create a new shot and work on your game. I feel like nothing's harder than playing a course first time without seeing it. I don't care how easy it is. It's going to play a lot tougher than just slapping it around at your local club every day. I mean, same group of people, same tee time, same course, same greens, just easy, plain, not my cup of tea.
Yeah. I mean, so like my whole thing with a private versus public course, I mean, I get the allure of the private course where it's nice to have, you know, a limited number of folks that can pop on and play. You know, you're probably dealing with, you know, a little bit more, you know, more available tee times and things like that. I mean, you might have the morning is probably going to be booked anywhere. But the thing with the public course, you know, is tough that when you have a day, you know, you never really know what day is going to be big, what day is going to be, you know, small or little in terms of how many people are there. So private courses, you're going to have a lot of douchey vibes, you know, going to be a lot of kind of douchey dudes. You know, public courses, you're probably going to be dealing with like a little bit more of the working man redneck crowd. So, I mean, I like the vibes at a public course a little bit better. I think playing styles are a bit different there. Public courses, you know, the public course people tend to play, you know, and like they want their handicap to be really low. Like they want that to be like a bragging point almost, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, I'm a single low digit handicap, bro. Like, what are you? Whereas private course people are really more out there, you know, sandbagging a little bit, mm-hmm. trying to win the cash games. So, I mean, I think it does bring out a different style. Public courses, you know, you're going to have a little bit more of a party vibe. Private courses, again, going to be somewhat douchey. So, I don't know. I mean, I think I, I'm with you, Daniel, there on traveling around and catching courses that you can just walk on and play. I like that style. So,
yeah,
I'll probably go public courses. Yep.
Yeah, definitely pros and cons on either side.
Yeah.
Just that playing the same track over and over, the repetitiveness of the private course is what does it in for me.
Yeah.
Probably better pace of play, better condition over there, but the same thing over and over. No thanks.
Yeah, pace of play is definitely a big thing. I mean, at my course anyway, you're usually playing in 3.5, which is awesome compared to you go to a public course at the same time, you might play 5+ hours, which is always tough. But one big thing for me, joining a course, you make friends there and everything. You have a group that you play with, but I'm sure that you're in your 20s or 30s. Most of you listening to this, you have plenty of friends, probably, hopefully. If not, give me a call. We'll play. When you have friends playing everywhere and you're at a private course, like right now, I'm kind of stuck playing somewhere to save my money because I've already paid for it. Whereas a lot of my friends are out there playing all different courses. So I'll try to play another course every week, but then I get that, you know, that gets added onto the bill. So if you have a big group of friends that likes to get out and play and everyone's not joining one place, you're probably better off just staying on the public circuit, because if you do join that private course, you're going to notice you're going to be playing all those rounds at your course, paying your cart fees. You're going to eat and drink. Your bill is still going to be $500 a month or more. And then you're also going to be playing 4 rounds at courses that are $50 to $70. So while you could be playing 10 rounds for $50 to $70, or you could be, you know, joining a private course and having to, you know, paying more. You end up paying more at a private course. So money-wise, you always look at those numbers and you say, you know, I think it might be more affordable for me to just join a course.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best bet is to just play the public circuit. Unless you get a great deal somewhere or all your friends are joining, stay on the public circuit. It's fun to go out and play different courses. I know you catch slow greens, you catch 5-hour rounds, but I mean, the vibes overall are I like them more. I like going and playing different courses. Just playing the same place every day has already gotten a little boring for me, to be totally honest.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, the conditions are great. I mean, conditions at my course, the greens are awesome. They could be a little faster. I'm sure they will later in the year. And going other places, I have a tough time putting on slow greens. I'm a terrible putter, although I did make every putt this week when we played. I am a terrible putter, so it's nice to play on fast greens. But, yeah, I like playing all around. I like playing different golf courses.
Yeah, I think everybody should get out. I mean, even a beginner golfer, you know, if you're just in it for the game, I could see the public side. If you can get a good deal and maybe you're kind of off the beaten path, you know, small town, maybe it's a convenience thing for you. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, to work on your game at one course. But, you know, you start keeping a legitimate handicap. Some of these handicaps I'm seeing, I used to work at a private club in town, and you're seeing guys that or in a single digit handicap that they play the same track every single day, you know? So this could be someone, a 15 handicaps playing down to like an 8 handicap, just because they're so used to that course. They know where to miss. They know where to land the drive for an extra 20 yards. They know every putt where it's breaking.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, Chubby, you're probably going to want to jump in for something here, but just really quick. I've been seeing that forever, especially in a small state. You see so many guys that are low handicaps at their home course, and then you see the RIGA events come up. And I don't know if it's because they have to putt everything in the hole. Shout out Chubba Watson. But, I mean, you know, a guy that's a plus one at his course, there he plays every day. He goes out to a course that he doesn't play all the time, and he shoots an 82. I mean, a plus one shouldn't really – I mean, I shouldn't say that. But, you know, for the most part, a plus one shouldn't be shooting in the 80s.
No,
just for a change of course. So yeah, like knowing the green, if you're a decent player, knowing the greens and knowing the course is a huge advantage for the handicap. So it's fun to get out there and play different places, man.
Yep. Try to bring some more reviews. Just kind of sticking in New Hampshire right now, but if anybody's got some suggestions, you know, good public in New England, give us a shout. We'll play it and give it a score.
Yeah, and the other thing when you're talking private courses and public courses, like the private course, that whole lifestyle thing there, is just kind of, it kind of creeps me out where like you have people like serving you hand over fist, you know. Like, I don't know. I'm just not a guy that like needs my bag to be like walked up to the first tee for me. I'm fine carrying it, you know. And so, I mean, and then you just get into this game like, you know, who do you tip and who don't you? You know, do I tip the guy that just said good round to me as I walked out the door? I don't know. You know, I'm sure if you're a billionaire or a super rich dude, like it's probably nothing to you. But like being a not billionaire type of player, it's just, I'd rather just, you know, maybe get the membership or pay the greens fee, get in the cart and just go. You know, if you buy a beer here, you know, from the cart girl or whatever, great. But I don't need my round to be, I like just handing out cash left and right because somebody like said cool shoes as I walked by and wiped them off or whatever, you know. So public courses, I think, I think the vibe there, it encourages new players to come to it. And with new players, you kind of break down those walls of the old kind of like racist stereotypes and stuff about golf. And I don't know, I think that's a good thing for the game overall.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. The vibes at the private course is just different. You know, people want you to know that they're important. You know, it's totally different vibe. And I'm all for everybody playing golf. Like I said, you can like,
right.
Jeans aren't, you know, I don't like jeans on the golf course, but if you're out on the golf course and you don't usually play and you're wearing jeans, then I'm glad you're out there. I am all for growing the game. I want everybody out there. It's the most beautiful sport in the world, man. It's such a life sport. It really is. And like I tell everybody with kids, let your kids play golf. It teaches you so many lessons about yourself. Like I hate to get like really deep on this, but I mean, it's you battle yourself every single shot. You're in your own head. Like it's just such a mind game. And if you can go through 18 holes and not hate yourself for at least a few minutes, then you're doing something right in life. It really is true. It's such a life sport. It'll also get you addicted to drugs, alcohol, gambling, you know, anything, all of the above, but
all good things as well.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to hate on those things. But it's just so good for your mind, man. It keeps you so level if you can get through 18 holes and like be okay, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's the best game in the world. I think golf is so healthy right now. So much young talent. You know, not only on the tour, just kids, you know, seeing youngsters out there all the way through guys in their 90s still playing. Like you said, just a fun, lifelong sport. There's nothing like it.
And even seeing like most of group chat golf's following is, you know, 26 to 34. And these guys, a lot of these guys are just starting. They're just picking it up. They're ex-athletes. They played hockey. They played baseball. And they're saying, what do we do now? You know, we can't go out and play those games every day. They're all taking up golf. I there's no better thing to take up. You can play it till you're 90, you know, and you can have good days and bad days. And it's just like, oh man, golf is just something else, man.
Yeah. We just need some more courses now because the tee times are filling up.
Yeah. It's been busy.
It's getting tough.
It's that time of year too.
Yeah.
You know, what really chaps my ass getting kicked off the course for beer bong and beers in the tee box. Well, those days are over, people, okay? Because my friends at Big Bertha have developed the 15th club. And what this device does is it sneaks into your bag and it acts like a driver. It's got a head cover. But folks, what it actually is the gentleman's beer bong. You fill it up with beer, you chug it down, and then you let her rip. That's Big Bertha. You can get your very own at bigbertha.com. That's BIGBERTHA.com. Big Bertha. Let her rip.
All right. So we talked about private courses versus public courses. Another big question that we had, another topic people wanted us to touch on, playthrough etiquette. When to let someone play through? When should you be when should somebody be letting you play through? And this is something that you learn if you start young, you kind of learn, or if you're bad at golf, you learn, you know, through experience. But number one, if there's nobody in front of you and you're, you know, you got a group behind you waiting on every shot, even if it's a foursome and a foursome, you got to let them through. You got to let them through if somebody's waiting on every shot. If they got, you know, and I think I spoke about this, there's nothing more stressful than having somebody behind you waiting on every shot. You're always looking there. And if you're not, then you're kind of a douchebag. Always, always a numbers game. If they got less than you, you let them play through. And what's it going to be? You know, they're going to be out of their way in 2 seconds, and then you're going to have a nice day from there. And you got nobody waiting behind you, nothing to worry about. Now, we played, we actually got out there on, what did we play, Thursday? All of us got together.
Mm-hmm.
And we let, what, five groups play through? Because we were just having a, you know, having a good time.
Yeah.
I don't know how there were so many singles in a row behind us, but we let every single one of them play through.
Yeah, there was a slow trickle of singles that came out behind us. And
yeah, yeah, we probably lost an hour to letting groups play through, but we did play some Poison, and I'm sure most of you guys know the game Poison. Yep. If not, look it up, Google that shit. It's a fun game to pass the time when you're way in or when you're letting groups play through.
It is. It gets pretty.
Yeah. So
game on the on T-box playing
through, play I will say. I had, you know, there is a cutoff point. Now, let's say you're on the back nine, you're on hole. I had a guy the other day on hole 17, you know, hands on his hips. I'm like, where do you want to go? Even mm-hmm. if there's room in front of me, I mean, you got one hole after this, you know, yeah. Sit back and relax, pal.
Yeah, that's a great point. Don't
where you got to be.
Yeah. If it comes on late in the round, last couple holes, don't worry about it. But if you're letting that marinate for a while, just let him through. It's going to be best for everybody. They're going to be happy. You're going to be happy that you did it. You're not going to be thinking about the group behind you the whole time. It's just, you're just better off.
If it is a group of four and a group of four, you know, maybe give it a few holes. You know, if they're close to you on one hole, finish that one, go tee off. And then, you know, if you finish that second hole out and they're still right behind you, like, then it's maybe time to wave them through.
Yep. And a couple of ways to do it, you know, usually it's best to like today, for instance, I played a round in the morning. We let a couple of groups play through. We got to a par three. We all teed off. Then we waited for the group behind us to get to the tee because they had been waiting on the last shot. There was two guys there. We had three. We teed off and then we waited for them. We said, all right, guys, why don't you go ahead? You can play through. We had already hit our shots. So when they get off the green, we're going to be right behind them anyway. They're going to fly away. We'll never see them again all day. But par threes are a great spot to do it. Even if they're on the tee, let them hit up. That's what I learned early on in my golfing career. Par threes are a great place to let people play through. It's just easier that way.
Well, one of the big things I see also with people not knowing – kind of to avoid having to play through, people not knowing when to hit, you'll have a drivable par four and there'll be a guy on the tee with honors who wants to hit driver and drive the green, and there's three guys standing next to him with iron who just want to lay up, and he's waiting on the green to clear because he won't give his honors up. You know, that's something I'll never let happen in my group. If someone wants to hit iron, by all means, take, I don't care if I just made eagle, you know, or a hole in one, go ahead, take my honors. Because it's just a simple pace of play thing. Ready golf. If you're not going to hit into the group in front of you because you want to hit an iron off the tee, you shouldn't have to wait until they're 350 yards away so that the guy with honors can try and hit a drop.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that, simple spacing. And if you are a group of four and there's a four behind you, it's basically, as Sonny said, if you play golf long enough, for those listening, you know if you're slow, you know if the group needs to play through. But if you see four guys on the tee and no one can hit yet, and nobody in your group has hit in the fairway, and they're already on the tee, that's a sign. You know, if they get up there when your last guy is hitting and they just get to the tee, you're doing fine. You shouldn't let them play through, because sometimes that'll slow down play worse for the groups behind you. You know, it'll stack it up when you let someone play through. So, other than that, it's kind of, you know, it is important. It definitely can, a round can go anywhere from 4 hours to 5.5, as you know, the other day, with the group chat podcast round, we let three or four groups play through. You're out there for five and a half hours. But I mean, if you're on the golf course, where do you have to be afterwards? You know, isn't that just extra time away from the wife, away from the kids?
Yep.
Nice little escape.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting point, Daniel, and that's going to bring me into this week's version of Chubba Watson's Ask a Scratch Ooh. Golfer. That is brought to you by Weekend Warrior Golf, the casual lifestyle brand for the weekend warrior. Go check out those tees. And so my question for you guys today is, what is that balance point in dealing with pace of play where you – Whose round is more important? Is it the person behind you that you should be worried about? Is it your round that you paid for? And how do you kind of find that balance point? Because I hear all the time, and it's probably the same crowd as the people who pick up the ball in the gimme community. I hear all the time about pace of play. Bro, if you're not fast out there, get off the course, get out of my way. All right, I want to be done in 3:25, not a minute later. Mm-hmm. So where do you find that balancing point between I'm not rushing my round, but I have to be so conscious of pace of play for everybody else out there?
Well, I think if you're a guy that's concerned about your score, but also concerned about playing fast, you're an absolute moron. I mean, you're going to play better by taking your time on the greens, looking over putts, taking a few practice swings before a shot, thinking it over, envisioning the shot, a whole pre-shot routine. And I don't see that from maybe, you know, 2 out of 10 people I come across on the golf course. You'll see somebody with a pre-shot routine or, oh, this guy's looking over the putt from both sides. Most of it is just this get up and whack it, rushed. Oh, I'm here to have a few drinks for my league night and shoot my 45. And I don't see – maybe people just in general aren't that concerned about their score at a public course where they're just, you know, hey, let me get it over with as quick as I can because I suck. You know, maybe that's part of it. Beats me.
Yeah, I score well and I play fast. The guys that I play with, we like to play ready golf. So we, you know, it's not who's first on the tee. I mean, it's not honors. Honors is so 1890. I mean, just play fucking ready golf. If you're going to hit an iron and somebody else is hitting a driver, let the guy with the iron go first. Of course, it's a great point, Daniel. So for me, I like playing. I don't like waiting on a shot. If you have a nice steady round where you're playing at one pace for 12 holes and then you catch a group, that's the first thing you're going to say is fuck, my round's fucked now because we're waiting, you know? And then that gets in your head and you're thinking about it every shot and you're thinking about the group ahead of you. And it just, you know, pace of play can get in your head so easily when it changes. So I think the biggest thing when you're trying to figure out pace of play is you have to know when you're playing. If you're going out at 7 a.m., if you're going out 7:30 or before, odds are you're probably going to play a 3.5 hour round, 4 hours tops if you're playing a packed course. But if you're going out at 9:30, 8 o'clock to noon on a weekend, you better be prepared to play a 5 hour round. There's pretty much no way around it. I mean, sure, you have 3 hours of tee times ahead of you already. No matter how good or fast they are, by the time you get to yours, it's going to be a little backed up. So 8 to 12 in the, you know, morning, you're talking automatic 4 hour plus round, 5 maybe. If you get out there before 7:30, before 8 o'clock, you're probably going to play a sub 4 hour round. And the same thing goes for if you're playing afternoon. If you go out at 3 o'clock on a weekend and play 18 holes, you're going to play that in 3.5 hours. You know, from 1 to 3, usually at most courses, it's pretty slow on the weekends. You know, like guys like to get out there early, get back to their families, which I don't know why they want to do that. But, you know, you have obligations. I get it. But I always try to play fast. And when somebody is behind me, it's the only thing I worry about. So pace of play, for me, pace of play is more important. I'm more worried about other people behind me than I am myself, because I just hate pissing off the group behind me. And I'm, like I said, I'm a fast player. I can go out and play in 2, and sometimes I'll go out at 5:30, 6 in the morning and play in 2 hours, 18 holes with 2 or 3 people. I mean, it's possible. You can do it. If you play ready golf and you have a pretty quick routine and you don't really care about making putts, you can play pretty fast. So for me, the biggest thing is if you want to play a fast round, go out early morning or go out late afternoon and zip around there. if you're fine with playing a 4 or 5 hour round, hanging out, maybe having lunch after, or, you know, grabbing a bite to eat before, having a few drinks after, you know, you have a 7 hour day that you're fine with, that your wife or girlfriend's not going to mind, go out from 8 a.m. to 12, you know, what's that, 12 p.m. Play a mid-morning round, and you're going to play in 5 hours. It is what it is. You got to know when you're playing. You got to know what kind of player you are and when you're playing, and then you can avoid pace of play problems.
Right. I mean, it just drives me fucking bananas when these hardos come out and they talk about pace of play. Like, I'm supposed to rush my game for somebody else out there. I mean, it makes no sense to me. Like, what are you talking about? I paid to come play golf today. And sometimes it's people in your group. It's not even always people behind you. Sometimes it's people in your group. Don't be that guy either in the group who, oh, dude, hurry up, man. Like, I've got to be off the course soon, man. Like, I've got somewhere to be. Like, dude, I don't care. If you came out to play golf today, like, play golf. I came out to play golf because I love being out on the golf course. What am I rushing around for to end this quicker?
Yeah.
It drives me crazy that people think, like, oh, I'll just schedule a golf round when I have to be somewhere in 3 hours. Like, you're not going to go to the movies to see a movie that's 2.5 hours long when you have something to do 2 hours from now. Oh, I've got dinner at 7. We're going to go to a movie at 5 that's 2.5 hours long. And then we're going to sit there and just start bitching at everybody around us. Hey, fast forward through this part. I got somewhere to be. Like, stay home or play nine. But don't bring that energy out to the golf course that it's like, we need to rush through everything. And I'm not talking about holding somebody up. If you can let somebody play through, let them play through. But all of this chit chat about, oh, dude, if you don't play under 4 hours, like, what? I'm not playing with you. Like, I mean, what do you have to do where you can block 4 hours of time off, 4.5 hours of time off, but 5 stretching it? Like, what planet are you on? Go out there and enjoy yourself. You know, I don't understand why. It's an escape. It's an escape from work, from family, from whatever. You know, you get together with your group and you go out there and you get to enjoy yourself. Why are we rushing home?
Yeah, and I just want to throw one more thing in, and this might be more pace of play or playing through, but if you're on a tee box with nobody in front of you, and the group behind you gets to that tee box, and this has happened to me so many times in my life. If the group behind you gets to that tee box when you're still teeing off and there's nobody in front of you, you need to let that group play through, because there's no way that should ever happen. That means you guys are fucking around on the tee, you know, and I've had this happen to me more times where I'm waiting for people to ask me to play through and they don't ask. And the etiquette is to wait for the group in front of you to ask if you want to play through. The etiquette is not to ask that group if they'll let you through. That's not golf etiquette. And I get it. It's 2020. You can, you know, things change. It's not 1900. But that's at the end of the day, that's the etiquette. You're supposed to let the group behind you play through. You should never have them asking you if they can play through. So if you're on a tee and somebody else drives up to that tee while you guys are still teeing off, let them through. Let them through.
Yep.
So I just had to throw that in. And
and shut the fuck up about pace of play. I mean, that's all I really have to say is just shut up about it. I'm sick of hearing it. And it's the people, I'll tell you right now, Sonny, Daniel, it's the people that pick their ball up on the tee and then they count it as good. Those folks. It's the same group. And then they go post that score. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I'm new to golf, so maybe you guys growing up, these things aren't as crazy to you. But as somebody who started playing as an adult and is now getting more entwined in the game, I mean, I discover fallacies all over the place. Like, what kind of – I need to come in here and revamp things, because – what is going on around here with this idea that we need to play as fast as we can? Like, if I don't lollygag. I'm not advocating for lollygagging. When it's your turn to hit, you need to be ready to hit. I'm not saying when it's your turn, then you put your glove on and stuff. You know, you can line your shit up and get your shot ready and your yardage and all of that and be ready when it's your turn to hit. I'm all for ready golf. But if I am looking at a putt and I'm under 40 seconds or whatever, like, I don't want to hear about your places that you need to be after while I'm looking at my putt. Like, I don't want to hear this. Hey, bro, can you hurry up? Like, I don't want to hear that because I'm looking at the line for my putt. And then I'm probably going to short that putt, right? And then I'm probably going to miss from 6 inches because I'm not great from that range. I get the shakes, but I'm a putted out guy. So now I've three putted. You see my frustrations there? And I probably would have three putted anyways. But the point is just shut up.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. I mean, I and like I said, I am a fast play guy, so I can't even slow play just really pisses me off. So I'm definitely on the other side of the coin there. I understand. Like I said, if you're playing between, it's timing. I know as a fast player that if I want to play my normal 3 hour round, I have to go out at 6:30 a.m. and I'm fine with that. I do it all the time. I know that when I play at 11 with my skins group on the weekends that we're going to play a 4.5 hour round, and I'm fine with that. I expect it. But if you want to go out there at 11 a.m. and play a 3 hour round, it's just not going to happen. I mean, you just got to know. You got to either be an early guy or a late guy if you want to play a 3 hour round. That's just the way it is. That's just golf. A 4.5 hour round is an average round of golf these days.
Yeah, that explains your.
And honestly, if you can do 4.5 hours in your day, if you can take the time out of your day, 4.5 hours of it's a pretty big chunk to go play a fucking game that you just kind of get drunk at and stoned during, and you just, you know, hanging out with your friends. If you can do that in your day, then you could probably take five hours too. And if you can take the 5 hours, you can also then leave the course and just shut the fuck up.
That's true.
You know? And that, my friends, was Chubba Watson's Ask a Scratch Golfer. That is brought to you by our good friends at Weekend Warrior Golf. You can check them out on Instagram at Weekend Warrior Golf or at Weekend Warrior Golf Tees. That's Weekend Warrior Golf, TEES.com, the casual lifestyle brand for the Weekend Warrior.
All right. So, jumping off of that segment really quick, I not even really quick. We can talk about this as long as we want, but we played together this week and it was a good time. And we had talked, oh, it's going to be so fun. We're going to record a podcast together for the first time because we do this from all different places. We're all in different locations. I'm literally sitting here looking into a wall and these two guys just on my phone. We don't have any social cues. This is just, we just wing this, right? So we're pumped to do a podcast together. We say, let's play 18 holes first, get some great content. We got almost no content on the golf course.
Next to nothing.
Daniel was the only phone that had storage, from what I remember.
You're right.
Yeah, we had technical difficulties. Yeah. And then, honestly, I think we just had a little too much of, like, good vibe.
Great vibe.
You know, we were just feeling it out there a little too much.
And we brought a guy. Shout out to him.
Old bags.
Seabass. We wanted you to get some content, but once we started playing, the vibes were just high. I mean, we were getting high, we were getting drunk. We really didn't care about content at that point. We got a few videos, but I mean, we were just vibing too hard. And you know, we got home for by the way, great match. And as the worst putter in the world, I think I made 4 must makes on the last 4 holes to bring it to overtime. Daniel dropped a birdie on 18 from about 30 feet.
Chubba three putted on 17 with a chance to win the match.
There you go. Chubba
to push to 18.
That's very
even.
Chubba of him. Daniel makes that 30 footer on 18 for birdie. Matches all square. I have about a 20 footer for birdie. I drop it right on top of him. We go to an extra hole. We go one club, right? So one club, this is a 200-yard par 3 for the one. Two club. We took a putter and a club.
Two club.
200-yard par 3. I think I took a 4-iron. Daniel took a 5-iron. Chubba took a 7-iron. My partner, Seabass, takes a fucking pitching wedge and a putter. 200 yards. I'm saying, dude, what the fuck are you doing taking a pitching wedge on a 200? What are you trying to not help at all? So we get through. I make a little 6-footer or so. I don't know. I had ice in the veins in this thing. I make probably a 5-foot comebacker for par to drop on top of Daniel. And next we decide to play like maybe a 40-yard pitch shot to another hole to keep it going. And of course I know the pitching wedge is coming in handy. Everybody misses the green. He pulls his pitching wedge 30 yards left, knocks it in on the next shot for 2. Nobody even realizes that we won the match with that. We just thought it was a par because he was having a tough day, kind of just hacking it around. Ends up, we won the match. Big match. we go home, we just get too high and drunk and eat too many meats to record a podcast. So here we are, Monday night recording Tuesday's podcast per usual. Didn't get any content together and just, you know, business as usual. Just like we never even met up almost. So we had quite a day.
It was shaping up to be a great trip. I mean, it was the first time, like Sonny said, it was the first time we all got together to record and had a chance to get, you know, a good couple of videos, you know, some video content out there. And, you know, we just kind of fell apart minute by minute.
I have to say, I loved everything about the day. Other than losing the match with my partner, Chuba Watson there, tough loss. But, hey, if you're going to lose a match, you might as well lose to a guy who made a net hole-in-one with a chip-in birdie. Now, we say 30 yards left. He was 30 yards left on a playoff hole in a drainage ditch and managed to – I would have struggled to get within 5 feet with a 60-degree as a 5 handicap. And the 30 handicap Seabass decides he's going to chip in for the hole in two, net hole in one, mind you, to just ice the match. And like Sonny said, we didn't even know what hit us. No. At that point, we're just so flustered. We thought, oh, that's got to be for par.
Yeah, we were picking another hole already. We were already on to the next hole.
It was not only for the win. I had a chance. I had a chance to tie right after and left it about an inch short. Wow. Pretty typical. Again, none of us really knew it was for the match at the time. But not only was that chip in to win for a net one, it was also his first ever birdie from off the green. The first time he's ever chipped a shot in from the rough onto the green, period. So it was really quite a quite an effort from him. And let me tell you, he's sneaky about that because he does this thing, and I don't know if it's intentional. I've been playing with him for years, and he has just swings the same swing. We probably both started off as guys. We went out there. We were, you know, in the 130 range. And over like 5 or 6 years, I maybe stroked that down to like high 80s, 90s type of player. And he just stayed right there, right at 130. And but his thing is like he'll just go down, you know, right around the turn and every hole, suck, 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 18. He'll be down a ton of money and he'll just say double or nothing. And then he'll have some sort of dream shot like that every time and just come out even. It's crazy. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I think the best thing about him is until that point where he chipped in, I don't think he hit one good shot. I don't think the smile left his face one time. I mean,
guy loves it. He loves golf. Doesn't care at all that he's not a frustrated player. Like he doesn't care one bit whether he's in the 130s or 70 or whatever.
I've never seen a guy enjoy shooting a 128 more than Seabass like on a Thursday. It was just amazing to watch. And for him to chip that in and be so excited and not even – and I think he might have been the only one that knew that we won the match right there. And he didn't even want to say anything at first. And then when we were picking the next hole, he was like, I made a two there, by the way. I don't know if that means anything, but oh, you made a two for one? You don't know if that means anything? And not only 30 yards left there, it was a 40-yard hole. So, I mean, this thing went dead sideways. And to put in the next one right after that for a quiet win was really something to watch. But
I will go on file as saying that I'm protesting the match due to the fact that he may or may not have broken the performance-enhancing forbidden substance protocol there. Now, we didn't establish which substances were banned and which weren't. But
it's true. It's very, very true. So we're going to have to refer to the book on that one, and we'll see if he's going to even allow us to drop that in. But we will get a rematch, hopefully at Charles River with Austin Cyrus, who we had on today, the assistant superintendent. Great guest. Really nice to hear why some courses have slow greens, because it never made any sense to me. So it was really nice to hear
that. Yeah, would love to have him on again. And, you know, any kind of turf questions that arise, or if any of the listeners have any questions about, you know, how to put a course together. We've got the expert there, so shoot him away, and we'll get the questions over to him, and he'll get them answered.
Yeah, he's our resident assistant superintendent now. So any questions we have grass related, we'll refer to him, and we'll have him on. I mean, again, we're gonna touch on all the topics you guys sent to us, questions, whatever. We're gonna ask for more. We got a spreadsheet going. This thing is long. and we're going to hit them all. We're going to touch them all, boys. So does anybody else have anything else for this episode?
I think what was the final recap of the group chat? Besides losing the match, I think Sonny was the low man. Congratulations there.
I think I didn't even keep score, but I might have shot a 78 or 79.
Yeah, it was a mid to high 70s round, probably high 70s round. Putted everything through the hole.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a fun round. I think I had I think I was maybe three over through seven, had one beer, and then I think I ended up like 16 or 17 over.
Decent round, though. So. Decent round for you.
Yeah, no, it started off great, and then it just falls one beer later. It falls
apart. Yeah, we were drinking those Trulies, the black cans, a little too sweet. So if you're looking at those black cans and you're saying, oh, those look really good, just be prepared to drink straight sugar.
Right.
The lemonade ones. Those are tough to get through.
Yeah, more than one of those is really tough in a 1 hour span. Yeah. You're going to want to switch right up to something else. Go straight to the hard stuff after warming up with one of those.
So that was it. That was the group chat golf tournament here, our little not even a tournament. We just got out and played, and we got way too high and drunk to record. So here we are tonight. You guys have us at our finest on another Monday night, ready to drop for Tuesday. And hopefully one of these days we'll all get together and do a podcast together.
Yeah, I think another business trip is definitely in order. And now that we've, you know, we're kind of slowly working the kinks out, you know, to see how that goes. Maybe, you know, maybe bring in somebody who has space on their camera, you know, and experience shooting videos. You know, Seabass did a great job there, but it was, you know, we just kind of handed him our phones. I handed him my phone and took one picture, and it was like, there's no storage here, so I can't save anything. It was like,
yeah, okay. I think I got four pictures, and they were of nobody. They were just of a mountain. So, and he kept saying, oh, let's get some still shots. And we were like, nah, just take videos. So we could have gotten some good stuff. He was trying, but we weren't letting
him. He put forth a great effort. We just kind of failed him on the technical aspect. And, you know, again, he did as good of a job as a guy can do who's not like a videographer, you know. So
that's that. Episode 3, Group Chat Golf Podcast. Everybody, let us know what we're doing wrong. Let us know what we're doing right. Give us some questions. Give us some topics. Subscribe to this shit. We want to be top 10. We want to be top 10. We're everyday golfers. This isn't a PGA Tour podcast. We're just one of you guys, just like DJ. I mean, I could see Dustin Johnson having a podcast and being like, we're not talking PGA Tour. We're talking drugs, alcohol, and fun golf. Like, that's what we're here to do. We're everyday golf shit. So send us whatever. Topics, questions, you know, problems that sound the qualities off. You guys suck. You just tell us. Let us know. Give us some feedback. And give us some ratings.
Yeah, you can get us Instagram. You can get us group chat golf memes. Obviously, Sonny there. As well as Twitter, correct?
Group chat golf on Twitter.
Yep, that's group chat _golf_memes. And myself, at Chubba Watson on Instagram, at Chubba Watson on Twitter. And Daniel Lafferty, where_is_Daniel_Lafferty.
Yes, that is correct.
And also my personal, at group chat _golf_guy, group chat golf guy. If you want to, you know, check up on me, I'm actually public right now. So come on in, check me out. It's all golf swings and shitty, you know, pictures. But we're back. We're here to stay, I think. Tuesday.
Put us over the top.
Yep.
Top 10.
Episode 4 coming next week.
Yep. We'll be back on Tuesday. Episode 4. Everybody, don't forget to subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. And that's it. Episode 3, Group Chat Golf Podcast. Thanks, everyone. Chubba, take us out.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We'll be right back.